Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon once again, as we are, 52 weeks of the year. We never have a week off, and if you appreciate that fact, you can show that appreciation by subscribing wherever you get your podcast, by getting in touch, contact eggchasers@gmail.com, or for more extra content, some of it spicy every now and again, you can go to patreon.com/eggchasers. That's been amazing this year, hasn't it? I'm so grateful and appreciative of our patrons.
Yeah, and a space where we can talk freely. As if we don't talk freely here, but even more freely
than this.
JB has shoes on today, I can report.
Yes, my Nano X3 is always ready to work out.
Now, when we're still in the kitchen, because one half of those are green and one half is blue.
It's cool, isn't it?
I could only see the
green
half. But
from this
half
side, it's blue, and from that side, it's green.
Yeah, it must have been the way you were standing. I was a bit confused. I thought you'd bought two pairs, one pair of green and one pair of blue.
I would do that.
It's a very JB thing to do.
Didn't the Premiership teams have like one...
Odd socks?
Odd socks. One home, one away.
What was that in aid of?
That was in aid of a charity or awareness of some kind.
God, more
remember.
Awareness. What would it be?
I can't remember. I think it was either a physical disability, perhaps.
Okay. I'm on board.
Forgive me for not knowing the answer to that.
Well, obviously I noticed the awareness wasn't raised quite highly enough.
The awareness was like, oh, that looks quite cool. It raised awareness that different coloured socks can look quite cool. So if they were trying to raise awareness of that, they did a great job.
Well, raising awareness, it's just good, isn't it? Great, just raise awareness. who was the guy? Do you remember there was a guy who went swimming in the Arctic to raise awareness of global warming? But like, if that was the case, swimming in the Arctic isn't that impressive, is it? What was his name? The human polar bear.
Wim Hof. Not the ice man. Not Wim Hof. No,
no, that's where Wim Hof goes on holiday.
It was in support of World Down Syndrome Day.
There you go.
2024.
Okay. So this is a reasonable one.
Yeah, excellent. A very good cause.
Yeah, I like that. Right, how are you doing, Phil? You all right?
I'm okay, Tim. Not bad.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. And we've got lots of rugby to talk about from the URC, from the Premiership, from the top 14. It's all getting very exciting.
It is. Well, it is. I want to talk about the URC for a change. I've got something to say about that. And I've got something to say about football as well.
Ooh. That's a great tease, that. Let's just rattle through the news of the week then. So, Jordy Barrett, didn't see that coming.
I love it. I think this is exactly the sort of high-profile signing that gets people excited. So, actually, Mark and I on Ergonomics had a bit of a back and forth about this. I mean, do star players actually matter? And I think he's got a great point that they don't always matter. But my view is it's the mix of star players and homegrown talent which is the real secret sauce. So if you're Leinster and you've got all those local lads and you can sprinkle in the occasional Jordy Barrett, that is the secret sauce, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And Leinster have been doing that pretty successfully for a while, haven't they? Bringing in a few, because they can only ever bring in a few to supplement the talent that they produce.
Yeah.
Unlike, say, Ulster, who just get whatever rejects are left when Leinster have picked, 12's a difficult position, so let's bring in one of the best 12s in the world. Who's 27?
Is he 12?
I think he is a Swiss Army knife of a player. He could play 10, 12, wing, fullback, goal kicker. So he's perfect.
He can play anywhere.
Yeah.
12 is a difficult position, so sure, why not?
Probably speaks volumes of the quality of Leinster team, that that's the sort of player that they need, who would guarantee... I mean, there's not many guys who guarantee a start.
I'd say need, I'd say that's a bit of a push.
Okay, one of the players who could get in the team.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
If you're going to spend that kind of money, they better play.
Yeah. Well, that is the point, actually, that... genuinely a world superstar, top five in his position in the world comfortably, and probably top five in more than one position in the world, and you have to be of that level to guarantee a start in the Leinster team.
I don't really get excited anymore about new signings. When I think of a new signing, I like to think about, where's he fit in, how's it going to work.
Cam Neill to Newcastle.
Cam Neill's back at Sale, is he not?
No, he's at Newcastle.
I thought he was definitely...
Anyway, carry on. I was just making the point that...
Well, Will Griff John's back at Sale.
Is he?
Yeah, it's a great
signing.
Big
news.
And actually, that's another thing which I want to talk about. But this signing of Barrett actually gets me genuinely excited. It's one of the few players I would go to a game to watch the player rather than the team.
He's a hell of a player.
He is a hell of a player. It's awesome. It's really cool that he wanted to do that as well. So this is part of a new deal that he signed with the New Zealand Rugby Union. He's got a new contract, and as part of it, he's negotiated a sabbatical, which ordinarily, in most cases, as with Ardie Savia at the moment, the player goes to Japan to just get a lorry load of cash delivered to their house, which he could have done, and he's chosen to come to Leinster. Now, the amount that they went on and on about the... he's coming back to where...
Irish roots.
It's like Joe Biden every time he goes to Ireland.
Or Donald Trump in Scotland.
Yeah. So that was quite funny. But I actually, just on a purely rugby point of view, I think this is just cool that he wants to do that, because he's going to play in some really significant matches.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
So cool.
I mean, like you say, Japan's great. Great decision for your wallet. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not
but,
at all.
But, wanting to go to someone like Toulouse or Leinster and challenge yourself against the best, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely agree.
Yeah.
So Will Griff John? Well, let's talk about Will Griff John for a second.
Is this part of a broader point or just on Will Griff John?
No, it is part of a broader point, right? So Will Griff John is not a name that you go, that's a tasty signing for somebody. But I think
I can imagine there's a fair... and I don't mean this disrespectfully to Will Griff John, but I imagine there's quite a few people listening going, who?
Well, actually, I don't know if you remember this, but Will Griff John was, for a short time, a gay icon. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember this?
No.
So Will Griff John's picture...
Did he appear on bristolbears.com?
No. He got picked up, I seem to remember, by an American website or gay magazine or something. Because he's a handsome guy, and he's a big, big, strapping lad. And they're like, right, that there... you know,
he is a bear, I think.
He would be classified as a bear.
Anyway, specific parlance.
That's not the point I was going to make, right? This guy came from Australia, he's part Australian, went to Doncaster. Sale picked him up from Doncaster, and I remember seeing him for the first time at Sale Sharks in a training session. I was like, bloody hell, he's massive, absolutely enormous. And then he went on to play for Sale. He's a bit of a unique character. He's quite a quiet bloke. But at Sale, he ended up making something like, no word of a lie, 24 tackles, not one missed. Or something like 40-odd tackles, not one missed. Like some stupid amount of tackles. And from there, he got called up into the Welsh squad. Now, at this point...
he was forced to go to Wales.
Exactly the point I was going to make to him. And then he gets released from Scarlets, who are no great shakes, and then he sort of trudges off to Racing, does not play many games, and back up where he started, where he's originally successful. And I'm just thinking, why has it taken all of this time to realise that, okay, certain players are developing in a certain place, leave them be. Don't just capture them for your own national good or your own national pride. The same happened to a few lads that went to Dragons, who were absolutely disastrous there. Even Nick Tompkins didn't really settle in Dragons. We know how good that he is. I keep on making the point about Tommy Francis. Tommy Francis would not be Tommy Francis unless it was for Exeter. Just no chance. And Will Griff John can put most of his success down to, you know, the efforts of Sale. And if there's a lad like that who's making a good name for himself in a club, why are we doing this? They're messing up their careers.
Well, players can choose to go, and that's one thing. But yeah, where they're in a position where they have no choice.
Yeah, they give you a cap and they entice you and they go, oh, come over, it'll work out. I tell you though, remember the lad from Leicester, a 12 called Jack Morgan? No, Jack. So ended up at Cardiff Blues, never ever played. And he started for Leicester regularly.
I can't remember him.
Well, I mean, let's talk about, in terms of transfers, a couple of players from Leicester who were starting regularly and they're now going to Australia to possibly pull on the gold jersey. You've got Guy Porter and Nick Dolly.
Yeah.
Both heading down under.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, Nick, that's interesting. So, because they've both been capped.
Yes, but it will have been three years very soon.
Yeah.
And they were either born or parents born.
Yes, correct.
Dolly, yeah. Porter, and they lost another one, didn't they, a few years ago?
Harry Potter went
last year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, players being pulled left, right and centre by the enticement of national teams.
Yeah.
I think it is a mess. They just need to sort it out.
It is a mess.
You should just be able to play basically from wherever. And if...
No, well, we've been over this. I don't agree with that.
What if
I like the rule that World Rugby brought in where you can play for another nationality. It does seem a bit farcical when you cannot stand down for a bit and then play for another country. I like that in the case of Fiji where they, or Samoa or whatever.
We always said that, because we were calling for that rule for years.
Tier 1 to Tier 2.
Yeah, we said one extra, you can only go from Tier 1 to Tier 2. You can't be poached by a tier one from tier two.
Yeah.
And equally, a tier one to a tier one just ends up being a farce.
Yeah. Like someone
going, I don't mind it. I think we're at the right place now. I think this is probably the compromise that I would have. I think fairly common sense.
Get rid of the project players, and I think this is far preferable to where we were.
Yeah.
Well, this is still preferable, but I think like Jean Klein or players going from England to Australia, just it doesn't really make sense.
No.
Anyway. But anyway,
it's happening.
I did see Will Griffjohn. I'll mention this very briefly. In the last few weeks, I saw his name on a list because I think I was reading about this because of the NFL Combine and the International Player Pathway. And obviously, one of the events in the Combine is the bench press.
The Matt Max reps at 200K or 100, 150 or something, or 100K or something like that.
It's just over, it's 225 pounds, which is like 102 kg. 102.5 kgs,
yeah.
Yeah. But I was looking up, and which, by the way, one of the Irish kickers, who's a kicker,
he did
got 23
reps. 23
reps. 23 reps on 100 kgs.
He's going to be an absolute star. That's that young lad, Dara Leader, his name is.
Yeah, so there's...
GAA
there's,
player.
There's a younger lad, an even younger lad, I think he's called Charlie, who's...
Oh, no, that's the one, Charlie. Yeah, that's signed, him.
Yeah,
that's him.
So
that's
he
the
didn't
one.
Set the bench press record.
That's the one.
The lad who did was one of the slightly older lads who I've not seen that he's got a contract with anyone.
Yet. And Harry Mallinder hasn't yet.
Yeah, but when I saw... Because Harry Mallinder is 6'5", and a big boy, and been a professional rugby player... And I was assuming he would just stand out. I think I said on the pod, I was assuming he would stand out physically compared to the other kickers.
Maybe not.
Nope. No, I saw a picture of them all together.
No, sir.
Those GA, but those Irish boys were massive.
The thing is, if you are a kicker, right, you don't have none of the strains on your body of actually having to perform a role other than kicking. You can go to the gym every single day.
Yes.
Every single day.
Yeah.
Imagine how stacked you would be if you were part of a rugby team, but all you had to do was kick.
But
and see, all the gym sessions,
Harry Mallinder could be like punt fake option.
Well, he looks like a quarterback. I bet he could be a quarterback if he really put his mind to it in some form. I wonder if he's any good at cricket.
Probably.
I always think cricketers make better quarterbacks.
Based on, the throw. Yeah, but as in. Is there anyone who's ever ticked those two boxes? International cricketer and NFL quarterback?
Well, weirdly, when I had a few sessions with Manchester Titans, both of the quarterbacks at the time were cricketers. Which is why I said, and I bet, in fact, no, not cricket, but baseball.
So
there's a lot of baseball pitches.
There was a video doing the rounds this week on Twitter of, it was an NFL quarterback, and I couldn't tell you which one, throwing a baseball, and he looked like a 10-year-old throwing a baseball with his wrong hand. It looked so...
Oh, with his wrong hand?
Yeah, it looked awful. It was all like... you know when you see someone throw...
Like I throw. I can't throw.
Yeah, when you see someone who either can't throw or is throwing with, who can throw but is throwing with their wrong hand,
yeah,
it looked like exactly like that.
That's one of my favourite drinking games in the park is,
left-hand catch.
Left-hand catch and pass.
Yeah, yeah.
Great picnic drinking game.
Will Griffjohn, his bench press The reason why he was on the list?
Was it heaviest bench
press?
Max. Max, yeah. Max,
I'm
not
say that's it, not was 203 kilograms.
I was going to say 225.
So there's two lists in front of me. One has him at 210. Oh. The other has him at 230.
Gee, oh my there's word. A bit of a difference there.
There's a big difference, but either way, it's very, very big.
Part of that, yeah, I mean, it's very big. Don't get me wrong. That's huge. There is a part of it where biology helps him. Massive barrel chest.
Well, this is
little arms. Yeah. And so he's actually, if some biomechanist had a look at that, and they compared that to, I don't know, let me think, Maruitoji's bench press. Mounder. They're probably, shifting the same amount of...
Maruitoji would, because he's got a big wingspan.
Yeah, a big wingspan.
Much harder.
Yeah.
Well, on that, that's a real thing. So powerlifters...
The back arch.
The back arch, and of course they do naturally put on weight, so it can touch their chest easier. It's a real thing. Putting on weight changes your points of leverage. Mm-hmm. That's why they're so massive.
And also, you always, always want to be in a surplus if you're trying to build muscle.
Always.
Always.
Yep. Anyway. Enough of other sports. I was about to go on to the Olympic weightlifting last week, but no, let's
No.
We'll come back to local rugby in a little bit. And we've got an extra episode coming, which is very much going to be on the subject
very
of local rugby.
It's very local.
Very, very local. So if just hit subscribe in your feed, go and check that out. We've got a special guest and an episode we're all very excited about. So, keep your ears peeled for that. But where do you want to start then? URC Top 14 Premiership. I've watched rugby from all of it this weekend.
Oh, have you? Yeah. Good. Well, we could talk about Saturday's games. So I think the Northampton-Leicester game, there's a lot to pick through.
Yeah.
Also, I think there's a lot to pick through from Bath-Exeter. I think they were very, let's say, high-quality games. They had some quality in them, but they certainly told a lot of stories about all four of these teams.
I'm just going to say something before we start, just briefly touch on, because I actually watched Bristol v Newcastle today, and I know you've got your issues with Pat Lamb, so I'll just tell you, Pat Lamb was so wrong. He is just... As he always is, JB, right? He's always really wrong about stuff.
Well, I don't know what you say, because he might have been wrong.
Turn over the page, Phil, there, I think. Turn over the page and see what the headline is in the rugby paper that Pat Lamb says.
Is it that one? Or one more page,
one,
maybe?
Next one. There you go. Bottom there. What does Pat Lamb say at the bottom there?
Lamb knows Diamonds Newcastle will be tough to crack. we did
80
say
points, was it?
85, 13 tries. We did say that we were wrong as well, because we said Diamond will at least make them a tougher nut to crack.
I think a lot of lads in Newcastle are going to lose their job.
They were embarrassing.
They are embarrassing. I mean, there's no sense. They are an embarrassing club.
Minus 300 is their points difference.
Yeah, they are. They shouldn't be in the Premiership. It's simple as that. Don't believe in relegation, but I do believe in kicking people out. And I think
you believe in a minimum spend as well.
Yes,
as a maximum
salary quite,
cap.
News this week, or was it last week, that Max Pepper, one of the few...
Guy Pepper.
I'm sure Max is his
Max
brother.
Pepper played today.
Yep. Is that a joke?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
People will not understand why I'm laughing, but the reason I'm laughing is about 9 years ago, we did a 15
food
of players, which were named after... When we used to do 15s, we don't do requests for 15s anymore, thank God. But a food 15, and I had to go through...
I quite like them.
...so many match reports to find the name Max Pepper, and he must have been 12 or 13. So I've kind
he
of,
was, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason was because his dad was like the master, the sports master in, I'm going to say, something like...
Barnard Castle.
Barnard Castle, yeah.
Something like that.
So he's actually made it.
He's
actually made it as a professional rugby player. Congratulations, Max. No, it's Guy Pepper, who I assume is his brother. He's off to Bath.
Yeah, who is a talented back row. England under 20s back row, who does look very good, although you'd never tell when he's wearing a Newcastle jersey because... Yeah.
They were woeful, but I have to say, I won't talk about this game for long because most people won't have seen it. But they, oh my God, they're playing some good rugby. They are looking so, and Bernard Janzi van Rensburg is so legit. And again, another example of how the demise of those three clubs has massively been a huge benefit to the 10 clubs that, well, nine clubs that survived.
Yeah, the nine that took any of those players.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, how just three teams have provided so many players across the league of such quality. I mean, you would have thought the two teams, well, the three teams, but I always think of the two teams of Wasps and Worcester, you would have thought that they would be topping the table on a regular basis, you know, the standard of their players.
Mm. But just on Bristol, they're playing like they did when they first came up to the Premiership and just going for it all over the shop. McGinty looks awesome. Harry Randall's amazing. Ibatoye is a freak. But it's, again, it's Ben Arjanti van Rensburg that's kind of the glue.
The focal point. He's so powerful.
He's so good. He just cuts amazing lines and his hands are brilliant. And I think he qualifies for England.
Interesting.
Does he?
Which I don't like, because I don't like...
But you'll take it, right?
I don't like project players.
He's not a project player, he just happens to be here.
But I also don't, yeah. I also don't begrudge a guy playing international rugby and earning as much money as they can.
Yeah, quite.
But I think he qualifies at some point in the not too distant
future. If he qualifies for England, I guarantee he'll get a South Africa cap. Because that's just the way of the world, isn't it?
Well, he would be a couple more years. So London Irish in 2021.
It'll
be 26.
Has he got another South African cap?
That's after.
So it's not that he's got a South African cap.
South Africa under 20s, he is.
Okay, so no. Okay, fine. So it's a bit longer then. All right, fine.
Yeah, so it'll be 2026.
He didn't arrive before the 5-year.
I think the 5-year came in before that.
Okay, fine.
I'm sure it did. Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe if it was 3 years, it would be this year, but I think it's two more years.
All right, never mind.
But yeah.
Probably irrelevant then.
Wait and see. World Cup cycle and all that.
But Bristol are playing serious rugby.
Form team in the Premiership as well.
Mm. Yeah, they are, without a doubt. But they've got a hell of a hard run in. They've got Saracens, Leicester and Northampton, I think.
Saracens, Leicester, Quins.
Yeah. Quins, yeah.
There's a couple of games.
Quins will be fighting.
I think, I mean, there's a couple of games coming up in the next 2 weeks that basically it's a shootout for a playoff spot.
And I think it's funny because Leicester losing that in my head was like, right, that's done. The season done
for
Leicester.
They play three of the teams above them.
Yeah, it's not done. It's not done at all.
No.
They're 6 points off. But next week they play Bristol.
Yeah.
The following week, Leicester play Sale, who are two places above them. And the week after that, they play Exeter, who are one place and 1 point above them. They win those three games, they've got a shot.
Yeah, I think Leicester are in one more defeat, they're out. Bristol could lose next week to Leicester and still go through, but then they're in must win. So some teams can afford zero defeats, some teams can afford one defeat, but we're getting very, very, very close to every single match, except the teams that play Newcastle, being really hard to call and so much on the line.
And Newcastle, one of their three games is Gloucester, who are the only team other than Newcastle who are out of it, basically, because they're 18 points adrift. So, yeah, they are mathematically out of it. Mm. Whereas Newcastle...
Next year's Gloucester's year.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year, yeah, maybe.
So Newcastle also play Bath, who are in second place, and that will pretty much guarantee them when Bath beat Newcastle with a 5-point win. Yeah. That will pretty much guarantee Bath top four. And other than just looking who they play as well. Oh, Sale. So Sale get a bonus point win next weekend.
And Sale were in must win territory and they did.
They did win.
Yeah, they did win. I don't think they're making the playoffs, so I'm pretty sure they're not doing it.
They look good today. Although, were Quins just off the boil because of last week in Toulouse?
Potentially. I mean, it's been a hard couple of weeks for Quins. And, you know, picking yourself up and having to do it all over again against another physical team, you know, it is difficult.
Mm. And Quins mixed up a few bits. It was,
yeah,
they weren't...
In the pack, it was about four or five changes, wasn't it?
Yeah, they weren't like some teams where they rested everyone. Or almost everyone. Northampton Saints, one of those who... It was a much weaker Northampton team than it was a Leicester team.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this, because I think this is great. I think what Northampton are doing at the moment is the blueprint, really, for Premiership teams, which is its coaching, structure, philosophy over team selection.
Yeah, and just one extra bit to add, because I think...
I think it's all right, all correct, as in the way they play, the structure, the coaching is all correct, and also the conditioning. Because I think there's two things that we've seen. One, they made big, it's been well publicised, big play on getting additional bulk on their lads, but also fitness.
Yeah.
And it was, admittedly, after the Qatar red card, it was the last 20 minutes of this game where they blew Leicester away. It was 18-17 before that.
I would add one more thing to that as well. Mm. And I think inside Northampton, they will recognise this, but I don't think it's something that will get broad credit, so I want to mention it here. I do think we are seeing Chris Boyd's work while he was at Northampton.
Oh, definitely. It's very much continuity, isn't it? It's Chris Boyd has left a legacy. He's never really that much of a coach anyway. He was running the programme and the coaching was left to the coaches, and the coaches have just continued with that work.
When Chris Boyd arrived, there's a lot of these lads that would have been coming in through the development pathway, coming into the academy system, and what we are watching now is something that's systemic. You are getting players arriving at first team level with superb basic skills understanding of the game. I do think that's a massive...
Do you not think it's understanding of the system? It's the discipline that sets them free, for want of another word. I mean, I've never...
Yeah, but you've got to have the ability to react and read the game and have great basic handling skills and footwork and all
that. And there are some people that...
And they all do.
Yeah, like George Firth. Oh, there again. The guy who I thought... this won't surprise you. Guess who I thought played well? Curtis Langdon, right?
So he did.
He played exceptionally. Now, he isn't one of those players with amazing skills, but I just think he's got such confidence of where the ball will be at a certain time. He can read the game. Mm. And it just makes it makes everybody look like a world-class player if you can predict where the ball is going to be. And I think that they can. Their stretches are so precise. Like, they can mix and match. But you are right, actually, Tim. Like, the genesis of all this would be having lads who can just fill in like Furbank. All of a sudden, you don't have your fly half. Well, Furbank can do it. Boom, done.
Furbank at fullback, fine. Who should we pick? Oh, should we have Hendy in the back three this week? Yeah, fine.
Hendy's ace.
Freeman playing back three and in the centres.
It's slight home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Slyham, you wouldn't class him as a high school player. No. He's just an absolute tank.
Yeah, he's just physical freak.
He's so funny because in the close-up, he looks like a superhero. He looks like, I don't know, 6'5". But then it zooms out from him and he's tiny.
He is tiny. I can see why you got the diminutive Tom Hendricks confused with Ian Whitton. Because he looks incredible.
He's absolutely stacked. He's in perfect proportions for a massive man.
But he's not that massive. Certainly not when compared to the enormous Ian Whitton. Or even Zach Wimbush, who is actually massive. On this game, and to your point, Tim, on the Northampton-Leicester game, there was two moments that were mirror images of one another that demonstrated the skill of Northampton Saints and perhaps where the Leicester Tigers' skill level was slightly lacking. And it was two England back three hopefuls. In the first half...
I was about to mention this.
In the first half, Freddie Stewart makes a break down the right-hand side. He's got a two-on-one, and I think it was Jamie Shilcock outside him.
Yeah.
And he just runs into the space, passes behind him, opportunity lost. There was an almost identical situation with Freeman, made a break in the second half, and he accelerated to the fullback, fixes the fullback, passes to Hendy. Hendy's in the corner. They're identical situations.
Well, Leicester did it twice.
1-2-on-1, completely blown by Leicester.
What's happened to Furbank? Stewart.
But he was never very good at this. I mean, that's the thing.
He was a one-trick pony. It was a hell of a trick, but...
His skills are, broadly speaking, twofold. He can jump very high and catch. Brilliant. And the other thing he can do is... He's sort of good with his feet. He's deceptively strong and fast.
He's a crash ball 15.
Yeah.
He's a crash ball 15, is very good in there.
I think, give him his due, he's probably slightly more than that. Like, he seems to pick a good line, and because he's big, maybe the quality of the line is somewhat exaggerated.
The quality of the line is secondary when you're pushing 110 kg.
But yeah, that's what he's good at. And the rest of it, well, put it in the bin, because it's not that great. Like, he sold Shilcock out. I mean, I don't know. Shilcock's a strange player, because he should... he seems like he's a premium sort of player.
I think Shilcock is super talented.
I do as well, in a way, but I think, why is he not playing somewhere else, you know, for a lot more money? I guess he's like an Alfa Romeo. Like, it's a lovely object. You want to own one, but you know it's fundamentally flawed in some way and you don't know how.
There is an Alfa dealer, Alfa Romeo. They badge themselves as Alfa Romeo experts in sale. I kind of want to buy an Alfa Romeo.
I'd love an Alfa Romeo. It's a gorgeous one.
What brand of car is Freddie Stewart?
Christ almighty.
He's like a Land Rover Defender.
Well, yeah, what car only does two things?
Yeah.
He's ace
at those things, though.
Kind of like a quad bike. It does a couple of things really well, but it's not ideal for everything, is it?
Might roll over you and crush your spine.
I thought that some of the butchery outside, like you say, from Les Sales was terrible. Absolutely terrible. It's far below what was expected from a Premiership team. There again, I think Leicester have got bigger problems, because this was a absolute quality pack which they fielded, and I thought they got outplayed. I thought they got outplayed entirely in almost every aspect of the game. They rocked out with their, you know, with one of the world's best fly halves. They've got the England incumbent number 9 when he was fit against Alex Mitchell, who arguably has taken his job now. I think there'll be a lot of people at Leicester who are very disappointed with what happened on the weekend.
Can I just pick up on the fact that Phil pointed out that there was a lot of changes to the Northampton team stuff? Once again, we've got one of the fixtures of the season not being a proper ding-dong battle. And I don't know how or if you need to, but it was interesting. So when I was out in France recently, chatted to Nick Abendon, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, and he made the point that there are, like, the derbies don't exist in England anymore, is basically what he was saying. He said, with the fans, they exist. With the players, nah. They're not a thing anymore.
No, I do see that.
Whereas in France, it's like for real, as in, because the example that he gave, which I've mentioned on the pod before, is Arthur Ituria went back to Bayonne from Clermont, got an offer from Pau and for more money, and was like, I am not going there because I'm from the Basque. Well, and I'm not playing for the rivals of my team. Whereas that never happens in England.
So I think with a tighter salary cap, players are forced to be less emotional about their team. I think that's a real thing. You see it in the NFL as well, that there's not really such a thing as a hometown boy now.
Well, exactly. But this is what I mean. It is what it is, and it's fine. And it's the yin to the yang. Fine, we get a salary cap, all the rest of it, and that's good. And it's competitive. It's a shame that really we try and hype it up as an East Midlands derby, and the fans get into it like that. But that doesn't exist. The West Country derbies don't really exist.
I don't know. The West Country derbies do. I still think that they are legit. This one hasn't got as much bite as it used to. I agree with you there. Yeah. But I don't even think this is the biggest game for Leicester. I think historically Leicester Bath is a bigger game for them.
Yeah, with the two, they were the two dominant teams of their eras. Yeah,
Bath Gloucester is still legit.
Bristol Bath
still legit.
I'd like to think it's still got something on it.
Yeah, I definitely think it has. I definitely think it has. It's probably the proximity of the two clubs and all the rest of it. But yeah, I don't think it's fair to say the West Midlands derby is... West Country derby fits that. Mind you, Exeter...
No, among the fans, it really matters. But how many people how many players out on the pitch really are initiated into that whole thing?
I bet they are in Exeter. I bet they're on Exeter, because Exeter tends to give a lot of players their first chance, and for a lot of players, their only chance. And I bet it matters there. I think you're right, though, in Leicester and Northampton and maybe a few others.
It was five league points. It wasn't local bragging rights. Which is professional sport. It's fine. It just is.
Mm. And you might have reason to complain that Saints put out a weakened team.
But they battered.
There are two obvious points to make to that. One, they've earned the right to, because they're clear at the top of the Premiership. Yep. And they battered Leicester Tigers, so they can put absolutely whatever team they want.
Yeah. We should rattle through.
Well, just before we do, let's just talk about that team selection, right? Because something has been bothering me, and it is from the world of football, and it really bothered me this. So let me just get up this clip, because it made my blood absolutely boil. You'll probably know.
And then we should talk about the consequences of teams that rested their players last week as well.
Yeah.
Pep Guardiola joins us. Many congratulations once again, Pep. Another successful day at Wembley. How was it? I mean, it was tough, I suppose.
By the way, he's won a semi-final.
Coming 3 days after that tough defeat against Real Madrid, 120 minutes. You must be very proud of your players.
It's unacceptable. It's really unacceptable. Coventry United, Chelsea don't play in the week. Let us play today. Next week, on Friday, will be better.
Yeah.
Instead of Saturday, put it on Friday to
Did
have
you
less
feel
recovery.
Unfairly treated?
It's impossible. It's for the health of the players.
Yeah.
It's not normal. Honestly, it's not
right.
normal.
I just can't bear. I can't bear this.
Wait, my heart is bleeding for those players.
It's not normal. It's not normal. How big is his squad? What do you mean it's not normal? What is normal, Pep? You know, filing paperwork for an insurance company. Like, you have a bunch of millionaires that kick a ball. Right? What is the natural amount of football you should play, Pep? Is it once a week? Is it once every 2 weeks? You know, are you here just purely for player welfare? I hate them so much, it's hard to describe. And now, this is how it goes down in rugby too. This idea that, oh, player welfare, too much rugby. You're paid professional sportsman. You do unusual stuff. Go and do it. Now, I don't know if you saw the result this week, which the result riled me the most, but the Bulls lost to Munster. Did you see this?
I watched the game, yeah.
What was the point? What was the point in throwing away your European hopes?
Imagine how much they would have lost by to Munster had they not rested their players last week.
Did they get a losing bonus point? Please tell me they got a losing bonus point, because that would be worth it.
No, surely. But the context here is they were ahead by 10 points or 8 points when Johan Usen just had an absolute brain fade and got himself sent off.
Just, right, the reason it's impressive to win all these competitions is because it's bloody hard. It's really bloody hard. We do hard things because they are impressive. Pep Guardiola, the Bulls, whoever else wants to hear this, like, do they expect that we should rearrange the whole world so they can win things easily? Because that's what it sounds like. Can we just win all the hardest things as easily as possible, please? No, you can't.
Well, we don't need
go and do hard things.
I don't think we should go over last week, because what we said about last week stands.
Except for the fact that they lost against Munster.
Yeah, but like, there's two
unacceptable.
There's two teams playing a game of rugby, and you can't just...
Unacceptable. You win the game in front of you. You always go for the game in front of you. Unless you've won the league or you're that far ahead.
Yeah, or in that case, unless there's, as we talked about at length, go and listen to last week's podcast, unless there's 24,000 miles of travelling to do.
Include especially that, because doing hard things is impressive.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So, it was a great win for Munster. They showed a lot of character, played very well. Bulls didn't play particularly well, and just Johan Usen just... I mean, it was an even worse decision.
Did Munster...
It was an even messier... moment in a match than Johan Usen's departure from where is it?
Racing 92?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And less lucrative as well.
Yeah.
Definitely less lucrative.
Yeah, definitely.
For Craig Casey's head as well.
So, yeah, the URC is right up for grabs as well. Ospreys beat Stormers away.
I have no idea. What does this mean in the context of things? You're going to have to explain it to me, because I have no idea what happens in the URC.
So, basically, Leinster are away on their own.
Yeah, that sounds all right. I could have predicted this without any experience of the URC.
Yeah,
can I guess? Leinster are at the top.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of like a bun fight between, I'm going to say, I think Edinburgh are quite good. I think Munster are quite good. Bulls are quite good. One of the other South Africans, and probably the best of the... of Wales is Ospreys, and that's kind of who's fighting for it. I've not seen the game. I've not seen the table. Am I correct?
Glasgow a second.
Yeah, you got Glasgow and Edinburgh confused.
No, I didn't.
Well, Glasgow are in second.
Okay,
Edinburgh in eighth.
Right,
but apart from that,
on the money.
Yeah, Benetton doing better than expected.
Phil's beloved Ulster.
Ulster
struggling to make top eight.
Yeah, but there's a lot of turmoil. With CEO and head coach or director of rugby leaving in a short space of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it is worth touching on, there was two decisions in the Ulster game. So Ulster narrowly beat Cardiff thanks to two decisions. One was a Rhys Carey knock-on that prevented Cardiff from scoring a try, going from going down the pitch and scoring a try.
Can I actually? I do have something else to say about URC, and I think it's really disturbing. Really disturbing. This decision, the Rhys Carey decision against Ulster.
So there's a Rhys Carey knock on.
Yeah, knock on.
And there's the
they were playing Ulster.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah.
Not, yeah.
Is Uchukwu tackle attempted to kick of a try-scoring player? So there's two controversial decisions in this.
Yeah, and it gets even more controversial because the TMO is an Ulsterman. Is that correct?
Don't know, actually.
Yeah, so this lit up Twitter. Like, this is a disgrace. It's so, and I hate this so much about the URC, which is, if you're going to play a cross-border competition, you've got to trust that your officials are neutral, no matter where they come from. And I thought the amount of the idea that there'd be bias towards one country or another, it just means that either cross-border competitions can't really work. But I think it's the absolute antithesis of rugby to be pillorying the officials for bias. I mean, they should be grateful for the officials. I don't know if they're as good as the Premiership guys, but I can't imagine they're busy making hometown calls for Ulster. Well, and it looked like a knock-on to me as well, which is the more important point.
It was. So the Rhys Carey one, it was hard to spot because it was knocked into, I can't remember which Ulster player. So he knocked it forward and it was immediately knocked backwards from his perspective. So in real time, it did not look like a knock-on, but it was a knock-on. It definitely was a knock-on that prevented a Cardiff try. The more controversial one is the Cormac Izuchukwu tackle for the try, which I don't know if you two have seen.
No. Oh, yeah, he sort of gets his legs underneath, doesn't he, and kicks it away. But he doesn't kick it away.
So the criticism from certainly Welsh Twitter
and
is that it was...
Did Nigel Owens weigh in on this?
Yeah, Nigel Owens has said it was an attempted kick. But So
let me just write. We can't have TMOs weigh in with any kind of authority if they're from Ulster. But Welsh Twitter is very happy for the Welsh referee to weigh in on the attempted kick.
He's a retired referee.
But he's Welsh, though, so how can you possibly have a non-biased view?
Actually. I mean, he's Welsh. We need to disregard anything he says.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's so true. He doesn't have any influence on this game or result, but he does have an opinion.
Well, so I think as well, the WRU might have had something to say about this. About disappointing refereeing.
What?
I'm almost surely certain not. I've maybe I'm making this up. Maybe I've had this as a dream. But I remember reading this on, I think, Friday night when it happened. I was thinking, this is wrong. Like, if you're going to have a cross-border competition, the unions in particular have to stand up for it. And even in the case, just have a check, Phil. Has either the team or the WRU
slams TMO after plucky losers Cardiff are robbed of a statement victory? That's the headline on Planet Rugby. Read the article.
Before I actually say how serious I think this is, did the WRU actually slam the referee?
Rather pointed match report on the official WRU website. The TMO Andrew McMenemy was heavily criticised for ruling out winger Theo Cabanga's third try. So it sounds like someone within the WRU has posted a match report.
Yeah, okay, fine. It's not the most serious thing in the world.
Yeah,
it's not like an official.
Yeah, that's not the fine, WRU making fine. An official statement.
But I would just point out if you are going to continuously lecture the grassroots game like the WRU do about abuse and whatnot, look after your officials, particularly at the highest level of the game.
Yeah, that third one. Did you see it, Tim?
No.
You have seen it, JB. It's breakaway try down the right hand side. Cormac Izuchukwu, the big second row, young second row, come off the bench for Ulster, makes a tackle in the corner. The Cardiff player is going over the line, and as they're both sliding, as Izuchukwu's making the tackle, he kind of swings his legs round, made like a side tackle, and swung his body round. And some part of his lower legs, I think it's more the knee or the shin, knocks the ball out of the attempted try scorer's hands. Which, in the heat of it, the TMO didn't look at it, the referee didn't look at it. As far as I'm aware, no one from the Cardiff team called for anything. But there have subsequently been protestations on Twitter from Welsh fans. Because you are not able to make an attempt to kick the ball out of a player's hands, and particularly in the act of scoring a try.
Okay. Just grow up. That's what I think.
Yeah, but it was a rugby incident. The Ulster defender was either attempting to anchor or attempting to get his body under the ball, but it happened in less than half a second.
Yeah, and
if he did kick, he's got a
lot of players want to swing their bodies around, don't they? Because if they're short of the try line, it's that sort of smothering action to either get under the ball or prevent the slide over.
Yeah.
It's completely normal what he did, and
yeah.
I have no issues with it.
I would have an issue if that was disallowed, actually, because I think it just sets a weird precedent.
Yeah, completely agree. Did you see a refereeing decision which I highly admire? In the Exeter game.
What was it?
The challenge between... I can't remember.
Someone letting the boys play, I take it.
Basically, yeah. Will Muir against Exeter winger, who's a sensation.
Feyo Wabosso,
who, by the way, was awesome. Was awesome for the first half. Then wasn't so much in the second half. Did you see the challenge?
No.
No, right. I didn't see that one.
So, it was a horrible challenge. So, they both go up. Feyo is not as high as Will Muir. Will Muir slightly higher, and they both come clattering down to the ground together. And it is a big, big challenge. And I'm thinking, he's going to get a red card here. Feyo is going to get a red card. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking he's going to get a red card, but I don't think it is one. I just think that's what the outcome will be. And as they're going through the process, I'm shouting at the TV like, nope, nope. So the first thing the referee said is, black, because they're in the black kit, weren't they? Black 14 is in an unrealistic position to catch the ball. Now, I hate this. I absolutely hate it. My definition of an unrealistic position to catch the ball is if no one else was involved and you carried on doing what you were doing, would you catch the ball? That is a realistic position to catch the ball.
Yeah, but then it is slightly different because of the... You've got to get off the ground.
Well, he was off the ground.
Yes, so that which is fine.
Yeah, he was off the ground. So they both come clattering down, and it starts to, like, I don't see any mitigation, and they're going through the whole thing. And then the ref sort of flicks up at the TV and goes, trim that again. And then he makes the decision that because Feyo Wabosso and Will Muir get their hands to the ball at the same time, and they're both in the air, even though Will Muir is higher, not even foul play. I was like, that's what you want.
But even if I would say, and I haven't seen the incident, so I could judge.
It is a horrible
even if Feyo Wabosso doesn't get his hands to the ball, then I think there's a good argument. If it's an honest challenge with the right intent and you were legitimately going for the ball, accidents happen and you don't try and mitigate everything.
But convinced the ref is going to be on the edge of... health and safety.
You've got a duty of care. Yeah. You've got a duty of care.
So I think on that, I think we've got... I'm good, because I've not seen that incident, but I think we've got quite a lot of game tape now where if the person who causes the harm or is in the worst position, if they've got off the ground at least, if you run full pelt and your feet are still on the ground and someone's in the air that, and you take them out, that's kind of your risk. If you're both off the ground, even if you are much, much lower, it's generally adjudicated as a fair challenge.
I think we just need to sort of grab the bull by the horns on this one and say, if you're chasing the kick, if it's been kicked by your own side, it is your duty to make sure it's safe. I think that's just a better way to do it.
I quite like that.
You can catch the ball if you want, but you've got to make sure.
Or how about the refs just take a let the boys play approach and just say accidents happen?
I'll absolutely take it, Tim.
Both just playing rugby.
Yeah. It does feel a bit more like that's allowed now.
Yeah.
Because this was a red card a year ago or 2 years ago. I'm certain of it. Just because the consequences of and the visuals of it. I mean, it was a highly dangerous situation.
By the way, I've just said that. Who was the very high-profile individual who used the phrase, let the boys play? Joe Marler.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
In relation to players going to France.
Yeah.
Let the boys play.
There was a similar incident with Will Muir a few weeks ago where it was a similar play on. It was ugly. Two players went up in the air.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely collided with someone, didn't he? Getting a ball.
Both full pelt, both got a long way
off
the
ground.
It
might be next to as well.
But that... Again, it was let the boys play. Both players off the ground. Yeah. Fair competition.
Well, Wilmer is a danger mostly to himself.
Yes.
He plays so bloody hard.
So does Faye Wiboso, to be fair.
Oh, so some of... Josh Hodge needs shooting. In the same way... Oh, hang on. Did I get in trouble for that?
Yeah, you'll get... Yeah. Someone will take you very literally that you're calling for the murder of Exeter Chiefs fullback.
That's right. We've got some idiot listener somewhere who decided that because someone said Diane Abbott needs shooting, which is a fair shout, right, that I shouldn't use it. But yeah, Josh Hodge does need actual shooting.
By the way, you're not the one that said Diane Abbott. Someone else... in the world had said that.
Yeah, I hadn't said that. I hadn't said that.
Just being clear.
She's got nothing to do with rugby. Why would I be commenting on Diane Abbott on a rugby podcast? I think even the commentator said it. It's a very funny little quip. And one of the commentators said, has Josh Hodge never seen Faye Wiboso play rugby? Pass him the ball. Like three or four times, it's a 2-on-1, and Josh Hodge kept hold of that ball. Give Faye Wiboso the ball.
Yeah. On refereeing decisions,
yeah.
Did you see, so? Christoph Ridley was the man in charge of Northampton Leicester. I thought he did very well in dealing with and concisely applying the laws as written for the
Solomon Akata.
Yeah, and the other yellow cards. The Miller Mills, the bit that was so in comms, particularly the Miller Mills and the Akata. Yellow and red cards. Austin Healey basically said, I know exactly what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. Yellow card there, red card there. It's what I thought at the time. Both were, the outcome was exactly right. I think there was something mentioned in comms, though, about the Miller Mills one, because that was, it was a yellow card for head on head. It was reminiscent of Manu Tuilagi and Andrew Warwick in the Sale Ulster game. I want to say it was last season, not this. It might have been earlier this season. Yeah, last season.
Last season, yeah.
Where ball carrier, in that case Manu Tuilagi, in this case Ollie Chessum, careering in, you've got a very static defender who is low, bent at the waist, could be a bit lower, but pretty low, and head is not moving. Head is entirely stationary, and the attacker's recklessness means that the attacker's head collides with the defender's head. In those two, I think the Warwick might have even been a red card. This was a yellow card for Miller Mills. But there is nothing more that the defenders could have done in those situations. Mm. So the law was applied as written. There should be some kind of wiggle room for that, or some phrasing of it, or some change to it, where if you are entirely stationary, you don't move, and the attacker.
This is what happens when you try and referee with a flowchart.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
I mean, it is.
Referee with a flowchart, I think a lot more people could referee, and you can't. It's a very, very difficult skill.
Yeah. It is. So Ridley applied it well. It was the right decision based on the law as written and currently applied.
But it didn't feel right.
it felt a bit harsh.
Yeah.
Certainly a red card would have been really harsh,
He said no mitigation in his...
No, that was for the red card.
That was for the red card.
No, I'm sure he said for the Miller Mills one.
He did. Yeah. He said, but low degree of danger because Miller Mills.
Oh, I hate... Oh. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do with the flowchart is standardise it, make it understandable to an audience, make it clear and consistent. But it just that there are always ones that fall outside of the line. For the most part, I think it works.
Yeah.
But I just want those. The problem is, this is where the referees are kind of held hostage a little bit, because had Christoph Ridley just taken that decision and gone, I understand the game of rugby. That is just one of those anomalies where this falls outside of the normal boundaries. Do you know what? Play on. The player did everything kind of right, and that in the spirit of the game and with a bit of empathy for what the player's doing and what's going on and the unique set of circumstances, play on. But he would have got absolutely bollocked by his referee and assessor.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does happen. I mean, one of the most unfair ones was Carl Dixon getting absolutely slammed for some ridiculous decision. Oh, I can't even remember what it was.
It was the slide in to score a try, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
it was something absolutely ridiculous. Anyone's ever played rugby knows it might not be in the laws, but it kind of feels right.
Jumping on someone as they were scoring a try.
Yeah, and the argument was the defending player's got to run behind the posts and...
Yeah.
It's just...
It was a sliding... It was a tackle into touch with a guy sliding along the floor.
And there's one before that with Tom Whiteley.
You can't tackle a guy on the ground.
On the ground.
Yeah, just felt...
Yeah, again, that's one where there needs to be some changes to the application of law. Yeah, or the
which
law
you could do,
be...
because like JP Doyle, when he came on the podcast and talked about it, he said there is an out for referees for dangerous play.
For dangerous play, yes.
Which is just a general catch-all. A referee can just apply. I know that doesn't fit within the framework as we've got it, but it's dangerous play. So I can issue yellow card, red card, penalty, whatever it is. There should be an inverse one of those where a ref can just say, and maybe it's just rugby incident, just to give a sort of get out.
Because it needs to be the inverse, because there's already like some unsporting behaviour type rule.
Yeah.
But that's to penalise something. Mm. You need one, which is...
A get out of jail free card, basically.
Yeah, to not penalise something. It has to be the inverse, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a weird situation. Thankfully, these things happen once or twice a season.
Yeah, for the most part, it works.
It's fine.
But it doesn't feel right when it does happen.
Yes.
Because you just end up feeling sorry for the guy. Because there's no, as you always have said, and it's a great way of thinking about it, what's the coaching point? And if you were Miller Mills' coach, you'd just go, no, you did everything right.
Yeah, you could maybe be a bit lower. You're probably not making that tackle then. If you're too low, you're not, and you're properly bent the waist, you're not making the tackle because you're not looking up at who you're tackling.
Yeah. Yeah. We should rattle through. Is our guest expecting us on the dot?
No, he's late.
Oh, okay, great.
Oh, is he really late?
He is just on a train back from Bristol.
Good, because predictably we're rambling on. Just a brief interlude then. So today, Rafi Quirks, Broughton Park under 16s, had a touring team come up to play. It's that time of year where teams go on tour and stuff. So we had Loughborough Rugby Club, cracking rugby club.
Better than a smashed you, Tim, with that kind of rugby pedigree at Loughborough.
Thibaut Flamont playing fly half.
God, your boys must have taken a pasting. What happened?
It was... Oh, the score's not important.
Oh, you must have got battered then. Crikey. If you're saying the score's not important...
70...
You only ever talk about the score.
72-19, I think it was.
Oh, no.
To Rafi Quirks, Broughton Park under 16.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
In their last game before the Lancashire Cup final next week against Waterloo.
Ooh. Where's that being played?
At Lee.
Lee. Interesting.
Lee Rugby Club.
Yeah.
So, we're getting the boys are getting a bus there next weekend.
Bus to Lee.
Yeah. Are they allowed to
the 43
a beer?
from Chorlton?
On the way back, of course they're not going to have a beer. No, but this is one of the things. So we had the game, then we did the little ceremonial bit after the match with, you know, gave their coach a tankard, pendant, and was it pendant? Is that
pendant? I think pendant sounds right.
Is it pennant or pendant?
I think Pendant.
Jermaine Pendant.
Well, have I told you something? I met Jermaine Pendant in Llandudno.
Did you?
Yeah, he's not drinking in Llandudno.
So we did all that, did the man of the match, all the rest of it. And then they did a court session. So this is like 15, 16-year-olds doing a court session. I was like, I want to see this. So I went and I went and watched on, and it's, you could see it's clearly, I mean, some people would say this is toxic culture, but it's great that you kind of saw the, you saw that they were being initiated into adult rugby at the age of 15, 16. It was great to see. So they did loads, they did fines, and it was, the lads had to drink blackcurrant and lemonade, and it had a Kit Kat in it. And they and they had to, they weren't allowed to use their hands to eat the Kit Kat, but they had to see the whole pint off.
Love it.
It was great. It was really good.
Fair play.
I liked it.
So, do you remember last week I was talking about Gordon League?
Yes.
Yeah, Gordon League.
In Gloucester.
Have you seen the email from Philip Atkinson?
No.
Tim?
No.
Have a read of that. Now, Gordon League was actually, and you can fill us in with the email in a second, General Charles Chinese Gordon, who is actually the subject of a Rest Is History podcast. So as soon as I heard that, I was like, hang on a minute, I know all about this guy.
Okay, a bit of a late mail regarding Gordon League, which we did mention on last week's podcast. My interest was piqued as I played against him several times, and it was always a rumbustuous experience, at least in the front row where I played. This comes from, by the way... Philip Atkinson, as you've already said. General Charles Chinese Gordon, Chinese, quote-unquote, Gordon, was a popular British hero who was killed defending Khartoum in the Sudan against the insurgent fanatical army led by the religious leader known as the Mahdi in 1885. That's what the guy in June is known as.
Oh, is it?
The Mahdi.
Oh, have you seen June 2 yet?
Lisan al-Gaib. Lisan al-Gaib. It's very good.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's very, very good. Blah, 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 blah. A very experienced... Gordon was there as Governor-General of the Sudan as the ruler of Egypt was a British ally being assisted by us, particularly in the suppression of the endemic slave trade. The UK, politically working behind the scenes...
No, not us.
Never. The lengthy siege of Khartoum captured the mood of the British public with great demands for relief, for a relief force to be sent. Prime Minister Gladstone stalled and stalled and suffered great unpopularity because of it before finally agreeing to a relief mission, which in the end arrived too late to save Gordon.
Ugh.
However, he became a popular hero, and immediately after his death, the government gave some financial support to set up Gordon Boys Club.
No.
As a youth movement to develop youngsters. One was set up in the Gloucester area, but soon after the furore died down, the government began to withdraw financial support, and most folded soon after. Politicians doing politically expedient things in the moment and not following through. Don't
believe
sound
like the politicians I know.
An exception was the one at Gloucester, which did carry on, and in 1888 the club established an offshoot called the Gordon League Rugby Football Club.
So where's the league bit from, though?
Yeah. For several years in the 1970s, I played in Somerset for Western Supermare, and our second and third teams had a regular fixture with Gordon League. Of course, this was the unimaginable to many days before, quote, leagues, and our club played far and wide with probably a good third of our games across the bridge in Wales, playing teams such as Tredegar, Abertillery and Glamorgan Wanderers. Great times. We played several Gloucestershire teams and even down in the forbidding Forrester Dean, where if someone invited you back to meet the wife and sister, when you got there, there would only be one woman. Gordon League and Matson had the reputation as the most direct and physical of the Gloucester junior clubs. What was memorable about Gordon League was their unique playing shirt, all white except for two parallel diagonal lines running from shoulder to the opposite waist.
Mm. Now, do you know what that is?
No.
It's like it's like a sort of sash thing.
Yeah.
Reminiscent of an officer, like a military sort of sash thing.
Oh, I like that. As I say, great times, but unimaginable now that we somehow had great and meaningful and regular games without the need for leagues. But everyone then had a roughly agreed unofficial place in the pecking order from Leicester and Gloucester right down to the quite junior clubs such as Duckingfield, Barker's Butts and Wiverliscombe. Plus in my own...
Wiverliscombe?
They're down in Dorset.
Oh, are they?
Maybe North Dorset. Plus, in my own example, we regularly enjoyed Anglo-Welsh games. Regards, Phil Atkinson. Now, Rossendale.
And I bet Rossendale, it won't be the last time that Rossendale comes up this weekend.
Yeah.
You just wait for our special guest to come up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I loved that email. Brilliant.
Cool email, that.
Yeah, fantastic.
Contact headchasers@gmail.com.
Love the club's names where there's a military link.
Yeah, it is good.
Military.
Have you played for Tok H?
I have played for Tok H.
Did you play in the Papa John's Cup?
Oh, I didn't know. Unfortunately, we lost 40 points.
What's happened to you as a player? You sacked it off.
Do you know, I've been so committed to CrossFit this year. And I was thinking about this today.
You film yourself in the gym. You're one of those people now. I love it. You're the person you hate.
No.
You love the person you've become,
but you would have hated the person you've become.
Yeah, I think I'm just toying with the idea. I was toying with the idea of saying, like, would I have liked that bus trip? Yeah, I think I would have. I was so paranoid. I've never been injured, right? But so worried about this would be the year I get injured just before the Open. And we've had the quarterfinals this week. So I've done pretty well, except for the fact that my second quarterfinal was a complete and utter shambles. So I did well on the first one. And the next one was, get this, burpee box.
Jump overs.
Yeah. So you can literally do a burpee and jump over the box. But if you do jump on the box, you need to step down off the box, which I didn't realise.
So not jump down off.
Yeah. So where I did 100 of those with 138 war balls in addition in 20 minutes. So didn't complete it. But then afterwards, I was like, I can't submit this score because I've jumped off the box. So that was the end of my Open.
They're trying to save people's Achilles, are they, with that?
Or who knows? It's fine. Just jump off the box, grow up. Yeah. Like
you're jumping, how high is the box?
You're meant to be an athlete.
24 inches.
Do you know, you're just meant to be an athlete. Jump on the box and jump off the box. There is no problem.
You can step down if you want to.
If you want to step
down. Yeah, if you want to be slower.
Yeah. So you had to step down and I didn't realise and I'm wasting my life. And you can't do it again because the amount of DOMS in your legs from that is quite incredible. Particularly if you're doing a workout the day before and then you're going to do a workout the next day and the next day. So in the end, it's like, that's it.
I'm not giving up. I've hardly played this season, but I'm keeping my toe dipped in the rugby because I'm thinking 2 years' time, or maybe even a year's time, when can you play adult rugby? 17.
Oh, good idea.
I can play with Louis.
Yes, second team. You can, second team. And maybe they've changed that. Because it's like 18 for first team and 17
for I'm not going to be playing for the first team, am I? That's fine.
No, but Louis might.
Yeah, maybe.
Particularly Broughton Park's first. Never mind. That is a good idea, Tim. Besides, I'm getting into seven shape now. I'm 6 kilograms down from my heaviest, so I'll be ready for North.
I was the first of my mates to have kids, and it was a bit of a lonely place there for a couple of years, with like all my mates going off and doing fun stuff, and I was not doing fun
stuff.
Changing
diapers.
But it's now diapers.
I don't know why I said diapers.
Diapers.
I've never called them mates. Diapers.
Chill out.
I don't know why I said that.
Now it feels worth it. I also had the kids at a party at the weekend last night, and we knew it was going on. We were out in town. We said, yes, you can have a party.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I'm just walking from the tram in Chorlton back to our house, just every now and again going past a couple of kids about their age, clearly hammered.
Oh no.
It's like, oh god. Anyway, it was fine. You've got all this to look forward to.
Long time for
what else do we need to touch on?
Saracens smashed second string Gloucester.
Saracens hammered second string Gloucester. Theo Dan is challenging Jamie George for a starting spot. Saracens looking ominously good.
Do you think, legitimately, the time is now right for Curtis Langdon to claim his rightful England spot?
I think he could possibly go on the summer tour, yeah.
I think it's not a bad shout.
He's been absolutely superb. Who else would be?
Well, who was the third choice hooker in the Six Nations?
Jack Walker, was it?
Who's not a bad player?
No, he was the World Cup.
Tom Dunn always threatens to be an England player.
It was Jamie George, Theo Dan, and
Cowan Dickey got called up, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
but he might not have been in the frame initially. Let's have a look.
Anyway, there's a few contenders. Cowan Dickey's still great. Sale were good today.
Yeah, tell me about Sale, because I didn't actually watch them.
I had my eye on two games at the same time. I was watching Bristol Newcastle, but
it was Cowan Dickey.
Sale were very direct and physical, and then delivered out wide when it mattered. Looked really good. One of Rob Dupree's passes for an Aaron Reid try was just amazing.
Rob Dupree, you say?
Ridiculous hair. awesome hands. Tuilagi look good. Sale look really good.
I saw the Northmore try with the Caden Murley break. That was awesome.
Yeah. Ford was better than Smith. The platform that they were playing off, obviously, is the caveat there. Yeah, Queens look like a team that got themselves up to a level last week, and it's always hard to back that up.
It's so difficult to know where you are with Queens, because beating up Bordeaux is no mean feat. And I think they did beat up Bordeaux. If Sale have handled them very decently this week, it's worrying, because, well, they need to go and handle Toulouse. And I think Toulouse can probably do all the things Bordeaux can do and all the things that Sale can do, and probably a bit more on both.
Yes. Toulouse are one hell of a team. Bordeaux are a fantastic team, missing a few key players, one of whom scored a hat-trick tonight, Pinot, who was missing.
Absolute beatdown against Clermont.
Yeah.
Clermont look like they're in danger.
Clermont are a totally real different danger. Team to what they once were.
They're 4 points off the barrage spot. Montpellier. In fact, the top 14 is so good. I watched yesterday while the what was the game that was on yesterday? Was it Northampton Leicester? I watched.
I watched
Bayonne against Stade Francais.
Oh, when Bayonne threw it away, the
24-7 up at half time.
Away in Paris,
24-7 up against top of the table.
The Stade look. I mean, they're looking ominous, aren't they?
Yeah,
67 points. I think.
It's the top 14 is so good.
But you know, I was reading
good.
The reason I don't want to get into the top 14 too much is for one simple reason. I love going through the teams maybe every 6 months and going, is that where that guy is?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, that guy plays.
Zach, we've talked about him before, but the Zach Henry story is amazing.
It is. Mm. It really is. And that would probably be the story that really captures my heart if he was to win it. I think that'd be awesome. And just what a stick in the eye to people in England that said that he wouldn't amount to anything. I mean, what an absolute disaster that's to be as a prediction for so many professional coaches.
And it would be nice, friend of the pod, Guzzi, Paul Gustard, to get a win after us treating him to all those Heinekens.
What do you call them? Delicious Heinekens?
Delicious Heinekens.
All the delicious Heineken boys. Toulon won, right? Toulon won. And you read the team's like, Cornel Dupree. They're still winning with a team with Cornel Dupree in it.
And Toulouse changed all 15 of their players. And yet, right, so Toulouse named a completely changed team from the one that started against Exeter. And you've got Julien Marchand, Thibaut Flamont, Chocobares, Gitoun.
It's crazy.
Delibes, Thomas Ramos.
Ramos.
It's just ridiculous, the team they've got. But yeah, Toulon, good win at home, 20-19.
Despite a first half red card for Big Bad Brian.
Yeah, quite. 38 minutes, he got a red card. But also, there's a cool story bubbling away at Poe as well, with you've got Dan Robson and
Joe Simmons.
Well, do you know who they played this week?
They played Altrad Industries this week, didn't they?
Well, they played the other Simmons and Harry Williams.
Oh, yeah.
So I bet there's some beers.
The brothers played
upwards
against each other, yeah. Yeah. It's but just like all the leagues, when you look at them all, it's just bubbling away nicely. But I'm so into French rugby. And next week, I'll be able to reveal what's been going on.
We've got some news, have we?
We'll have some news next week.
That's exciting.
Do you think it'll be positive news?
Huh?
Will it be positive news?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Good. Yeah. I hope so. I think, well, in that case, then I'll quiz you on why Toulon are able to make fourth place in the top 14 if it's going to be that good a league. do you want to do some predictions for next week before we get in touch with our guest?
Let's do that. Let's do that.
A guest on this podcast. We hardly ever have guests, so whoever it is must be absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And have put out some very important content in the last week as well.
Genuinely, the picture that I sent back from the Rugby World Cup 2023 that got you two most excited was of our guest.
Yeah, it is. We couldn't believe it.
I mean, there was some from the pool party as well in the south of France that got pretty excited.
Oh, yeah. But the pool party in Nice. With the Swedish guests.
Yeah. Oh, Tim sent a view once on WhatsApp. What would this be? What would it be?
Right, next weekend.
I'd forgotten about that.
Next weekend, we have
second versus third on Friday night, looking to either steal or cement a home.
You keep talking whilst semi-final. I start on the Zoom.
Okay.
Can you do that whilst we're recording?
Bath, absolutely. Bath versus Saracens, which I think so.
Ooh, that's a good game.
Bath may well not have either Cam Redpath or Finn Russell for the rest of the season, which is a blow. Cam Redpath, because they've got Ojomo, it's a blow, but it's not critical.
Yeah.
Losing one of the top fly halves in the world, one of the best played five halves, best played rugby players in the world.
Sorry, can I just
jump
back in on this? Because we didn't really talk about the Exeter Bath game other than Bath won and the refereeing decision. Max Ojomo is not the perfect replacement, but he's a very good replacement for the creativity they miss from Finn Russell.
Yeah, he's a great replacement for Redpath.
Well, and Redpath is more... like, if you're going to lose Finn Russell and Redpath, who are good together, I think the stability from Bailey
yeah,
combined with the magic of Ojomo, actually, it's not a million miles away.
Yeah.
Because Ojomo, his short kicking game is pretty good. He likes to try stuff. He's not phased in the same way that Finn Russell is. And in the same way that Redpath gives you that nice, stable, sort of reliable platform. Well, Bailey's not too bad. He's not. He's definitely not Finn Russell, but it's not the end of the world.
You're right. They've got good replacements, but it's not quite the same. And I actually fancy Saracens in this.
Yeah. Well, there's a bigger problem. It's the replacements for the replacements.
that
also. This is when we really get into the weeds. Yeah.
Okay. So that's on Friday. On Saturday, we have Tigers hosting Bristol. So that is 8th place versus 4th as they currently line up. And 1st against 5th, or 5th hosting 1st in Harlequins versus Northampton Saints. And on the Sunday, we have Gloucester hosting Chiefs. So that'll be an extra win.
You'd think. Gloucester at home, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
They'll put out a stronger team. They'll target their home games and all the rest of it. And then Falcons against Sale. Diamond welcoming back his old club.
King of the North!
Do you watch the BT TNT Sport production, which comes out after the game?
I did. The rugby review.
I mean, I guess it's content.
I was watching that because I hadn't seen much of the two games this afternoon. I was hoping for...
This is exactly what I did.
Some insight into this afternoon's games.
Not really.
There was some... I was going to call it nice banter. There was some banter between O'Driscoll and Doilers and Danny Kerr.
Is that from the studio?
No.
It's from the pitch.
Yeah.
It's
kind of like they just said to the guys, like...
It was quite good fun.
Do what you want. You've got literally 10 minutes, just make stuff up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they went and spoke to people. Now, it's a gamble, particularly with Craig Doyle, because I think Craig Doyle could have uncovered some absolute gems by accident, and... You either get them or you don't get them.
Mm. Yes.
And I love the fact...
When you say on the pitch, you mean...
Literally on the pitch.
Literally stood on the pitch.
What, players still around?
For instance, and this is a bit which I really enjoyed, where they went to Nick Evans and Marcus Smith and interrupted them. And Doyler...
So is this in the warm-up or after the game?
No, after the game. After full-time.
Quick's attack. Before he said anything to them, as soon as he got their attention, don't know if their faces changed or something because of the camera, he goes, "Boys... you're on live TV." Just in case they were about to say, "No, not now, Craig, not now." So, like, then he's got them both. And I thought at that point, it can either be complete shutdown, or it could be because Doyle asked him, like, "What are you doing? What are you talking about?" And I was hoping they were going to just say, "Well, actually, I was just saying," and it was somewhere in between. It was neither the TV gold that I was hoping for, but it wasn't a complete shutdown.
I don't mind. I actually just quite like Jeopardy, full stop.
Yeah,
and actually, there's something about this is live. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yes, and Craig Doyle is superb at that. Absolutely superb.
Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't what I was hoping, because I was wanting a little bit of analysis on the afternoon's games, but it was still quite entertaining.
Yeah. Just on that again, I cannot say enough. Please let the second series of the Netflix documentary have even a fraction as much access as Chasing the Sun 2 has.
You love Chasing the Sun.
It's so good. It's so good. It's probably, I don't want to say because it's different eras and stuff, but it's up there with Living with Lions, the first one.
Wow.
In terms of access that you get and
full
stuff,
access.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, really
awesome.
Did you watch the last one with the scrummaging?
Yeah.
Can you tell me exactly how you purchased it legally? exactly the steps you took, and then I'll purchase it.
I'll
equally.
Tell you exactly the steps I took to purchase it legally and watch it completely legally.
Fantastic, Tim. Thank you. That's all I asked for.
Not through any unofficial method.
Wonderful. Yeah, I can do it tonight. Right, look, let's close this down. Let's
yes.
close this down right now.
We've got a special guest
our
waiting.
Our guest is on the line.
Right, okay.
Wow.
Excellent. All right, let the boys end.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.